You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
It is the Anfield Wrap live across all of the platforms that are going, John. Even some platforms that haven't been existed yet. What would be your favourite platform for the Anfield Wrap to be on right now? I hope it's BBC Two.
maybe a no platform. One of those, but we'll see. We'll see. No, 13 is a good platform. Yeah. Often when you've got to run to a Piccadilly.
Yep, that's a good one. Excellent stuff. There's the platform in the Harry Potter books. That's Blag. That doesn't exist, that we could be on that platform. That is one that is available. Sorry?
Platform shoes.
Excellent stuff, Rob. On all the platforms, the Anfield Wrap right now. On those massive, you know, the massive thing that there is out the back of Lime Street, we're on that.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, there's no sound, so all they can see is me gesturing. Very confused.
Are we not live?
We are. This is us live.
This is the show, Rob.
This is the show. It is tour live, and it's happening right now.
Why did you say no one can hear us then?
No, well, the candidates on the big platform that were on outside Lime Street.
Well, you confused me there, didn't you?
I did indeed.
A long day.
Well, you know,
you were at
Preston with me yesterday, Rob.
I know.
If you've had a long day, you'll have got in late last night. You'll have gone from there. Preston on the whole. Chloe Bloxham's here as well, by the way. We'll start with Rob, though. Preston, on the whole, was a bit of a weird, funny first half where they couldn't get the shape quite right. And it's one of those things where you're left sort of wondering how to play without a number of players, but how to play without Trent and how to play with Nico. Because Nico has an excellent second half when we get him in the final third, but it's getting him there. That's the question.
Yeah, he does. I mean, it's a strange and disjointed performance that all goes right in the end because Preston don't take their chances, and we do when we finally make those chances. It's one of those where sort of, you know, on the 55 or hour mark, I would have happily gone, can I go home early, please? You know, I'm tired and I want to go to bed. Full stop. But you know what? I hate to say, it's not right to say that Liverpool are leading a charmed life this season, but things are nicely going right for us. He said, tempting fate terribly. Felt a bit like Norwich, you know, wasn't spectacular performance. Even when Norwich get a penalty, they miss their penalty.
Yeah.
Preston get their chances, couple of good ones. They
hit Nico flat in the face. He didn't even know where he was.
Exactly. And we end up with a good news story, not just a nice 2-0 win, the good news story of Nico Williams having quite a redeeming kind of performance in a way, and Taki Minamino and Origi bagging, which keeps them, you know, in a confident frame of mind, I think.
In the comments there, Chloe, Colin Joseph said he's very impressed with Nico's patience in the box, best performance he's seen from him. And you sort of see that a couple of times. Yes, he should square it for Minamino, and I think if it's 0-0 at the time, he does square it for Minamino. But apart from that, I was intrigued by the fact that he looked like a genuine final third threat. And when we've seen him at times this season, that's what he's looked a little bit like. Plays a really good ball in the game against Watford for the Firmino goal. He looks like he can really contribute in an attacking sense, Williams. It's working out how to get him there as much as everything else.
Yeah, exactly. And I think, you know, once we actually transitioned and moved him up the pitch into right wing, he had more license to go forward. And I love how he's always, Sam, taking the extra touch and taking on someone in the box as well. He's not scared. He doesn't then turn back as soon as a man's faced up against him. He tries to take him on and he goes round them and looks for another body in the box. And to be fair to him, he's had his criticism over the years. And I think you're always going to get that with a young player, but also B, when you've got someone like Trent Alexander-Arnold who's playing him in his position, you know, you can't compare the two. And it'd be unfair to compare the two because he can't hit the heights of Trent, and he's still only young and he's still learning. But his attack and play was brilliant against Preston, and fair play to him, because you know he makes the block off the line, and then the second half he's going and assisting.
Yeah, the fact that the manager makes the change as well suggests that it isn't necessarily something that they're looking at, but something that they're aware of that he can do it. So he doesn't just sort of end up by default, you know, sort of in that position.
Sort of like injuries or something.
Yeah. He makes the sub and he brings Conor Bradley on and sort of, you know, pushes him forward sort of in that position where other options are available. For example, you know, Scott Bonner, who scored twice in the week for the under-23s, you know, he could have just sort of thrown him up there type thing and told him to sort of run around, but he goes with it. So it's something that, as I say, doesn't necessarily aware of, but it's something that, you know, that they were confident enough in there to do it to suggest that it's not sort of a flash in the pan in terms of what they're seeing in training, in terms of his attacking movements as well as his decision making and his sort of confidence in delivery, and it is the sort of, you know, the outstanding moment that the game sort of needed, really.
The one of the things I think about him with Nico, going right the way back to when we first got to see him, John, in 2019, was he grabbed his opportunity, but also there was talk of him really impressing in training and taking on what's been suggested to him. We know Linders especially has talked about staying calm in key moments and creating not 5 and 6 out of 10 chances, but 7, 8 and 9 out of 10 chances. And I do wonder if he's a player who's able to be coached in that way, because that's what, when Chloe's talking about that calm, arguably for both goals, he demonstrates the idea that he's in control of the situation and he's going to find something really good. And I'm just, you know, in the end, it's obviously a ridiculous, hysterical, brilliant finish from Divock. But the ball's in the penalty area for ages because Nico's trying to find a way to ensure the chance is as good as possible.
Yeah, and I think he deserves sort of, you know, great credit for that in terms of both goals, really. And you know, you hope that it gives him a lot of confidence. You know, there was a bit of talk that he was going to move on in the summer, and part of that was first team football. And I think part of it was the whole Liverpool bubble was maybe getting a bit much for him, and he was feeling the sort of pressure and he wanted to sort of step away and go somewhere with a bit less limelight and a bit more football. But he stayed for a variety of reasons, I think probably partly because of offers, but also you'd hope that he has a bit of a sort of a change of heart. And, you know, that is a performance that will hopefully help him. And I think, you know, this cup run has been littered with those, really. And I think there's lots of reasons, you know, to be positive. I think last night's performance was generally a bit more like what you expect from the League Cup. I think, you know, the previous rounds, you know, we were like, oh, they're all gelling together brilliantly. Last night was a bit more sort of what you'd normally expect and what we've seen a bit more over the last few years. But that's not to say that there aren't positives, both including that they've got the results in the next round.
One of the other positives, Chloe, is getting to see Tyler Morton. Didn't have any real awareness as to who he was and what he was about prior to the start of this season. But what he appears to be about is, again, a really calm head. And that's one of the things that these Liverpool players who are emerging appear to have as a sort of a collective characteristic. They all appear to have real composure, to be honest with you. And I thought Morton, even when things weren't going well, which for a lot of the Liverpool side, I think they were going great for the first half, Morton never loses his head, never tries to force the issue, never does anything in any way, shape or form that can be deemed reckless. He just keeps trying to find a way to play.
Yeah, he was brilliant, and I think I said that after the game, I've been extremely impressed with him both times that I've seen him, and he looks like a quality player, to be fair. I think the thing that epitomised him was, you know, you saw him going into tackles and coming out with the ball, but there was at times where he had a man on him and he was always willing to receive it, and even with that man on, he'd just take the person on. He wouldn't panic and pass straight back to the player who had it passed to him. He just turned the player inside out and then recycled the ball, and he kept us moving. He nearly does a brilliant pass into Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain, who can't get it under his spell, which was, you know, you could see the attacking side that he can also bring, his vision and passings there, which was brilliant. And all round, it looks like these youngsters know that they're going to get a chance, and therefore they're calm because they know that their chance will continue coming and they've got to take it. And it's brilliant to see. It's a great order, especially when these are youngsters with a lot of quality.
The two halves of Gomez, Rob, are really interesting. Joe Gomez's two halves. First half, he looked like he was just struggling to find his feet a little bit in a way that is surprising. One of looked like it was missing was his ability to recover when balls are over the top, when someone's a little bit out of position. Second half, it was the absolute opposite. And second half, they bring their better forward on Preston, and Gomez just looked completely composed. I think at times where, because Van Dijk's come back and looked relatively smooth, Matip's come back and looked relatively smooth, we maybe need to acknowledge it might take Gomez a little bit longer, but it took him a little bit longer after he came back after the injury he got against Burnley. It took him a little bit longer there. I think patience will be the order of the day here.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, he isn't getting games. You know, he's not going to find rhythm without getting games at a senior level. And you're right to say he does have form, if that's the right way of putting it, of being maybe a little bit slow in getting back to his best after injury, but his injuries have been very, very bad injuries. He had the, he had the injury when Klopp just came in. He had the injury at Burnley, and now he had the one last season as well. So we really shouldn't expect too much of Joe Gomez too soon. But having said that, I do agree with you. I thought I'd rather park the first half performance. No disaster there, but nothing to write home about. But the second half performance was, albeit given the stage notwithstanding, I thought he was imperious, wasn't he? He dominated the game from the back in a certain sense. He was very, very commanding and impressive.
Also, Rob, Minamino, gets himself on the score sheet again. Gets spoken about afterwards by the managers. He knows what we want. What I think is difficult for Minamino is his middle third play. That's where he's maybe not influencing things as much as Liverpool would like, where he's just not quite able to hit the game. Everything around the penalty box, he just looks so bright.
Do you know what, Neil? I liked his all-round game yesterday. I thought he was being with a couple of better players away from having a really quite impressive performance. I think I said post-match, if you put Nico's quite dynamic second half showing to one side, he was arguably our man of the match, Minamino, without being, you know, sensational by any means. I thought he was all right between the lines. There were little flashes for me of the player that impressed us when he played at Anfield for Salzburg the first time. I just thought if he had one or two more sort of willing runners or cohorts alongside him, he might have come off that pitch looking a better player than he looked in reality.
What, John, when will the Divock ratio end? Between either goals that just make you laugh your head off, goals that precipitate the biggest celebration imaginable, or some combination of the two. It's unbelievable. I mean, the goal is unbelievable, really, what he does. And the fact that the slow pace of it, the keeper almost dives past it through sheer panic. I've watched it about 10 times, and he's there. He scores it because he's there, but my God, with Origi, it's always one more mad goal. And when he's beginning to laugh at himself as well, on top of everything else, at least he's in on the joke these days.
Yeah, it is a mad one, isn't it? He'd not played great either, which sort of adds to it, really. It's, you know, it's this, from the sublime to the ridiculous kind of, you know, moment. And I think, you know, he's got some highlights reel now, hasn't he, today? I mean, he had one already, but this is, you know, another one to add to it. I think he generally struggled. I think of the senior pros, he was maybe sort of the most disappointing in terms of what you'd like to see from him in these sort of performances. But then he gets his goal and both the forwards too, and that has to count for something, really. You know, we want to keep them as sharp as we possibly can, we want to keep them as keen as possibly can for if and when we might need them, but also as confident as possible. And they'll go off the pitch today, you know, with some frustrations, partly in terms of how they play, but also, like Rob said, I think Minamino, you know, would have just liked a bit more sort of quality around him, really, and sort of started well and seemed to be looking for it, and then seemed to go into his shell just because, you know, there wasn't necessarily the movement around him. He was the one I sort of most felt sorry for, really, on the pitch. Well, him and him and Blair, who we seemingly used for an out ball for 20 minutes, which was very harsh indeed. He's Sadio Mane, isn't he? Seemed to be the sort of reaction, you know what I mean? He's like, you know, he's absolutely not. He's a kid. But yeah, it was using him sort of in that way was a little bit harsh, but also on Minamino. But they both get the goal, and that's what, you know, forwards get paid for, and they can be sort of, you know, pleased with their efforts overall.
Last little thing in the comments there, Steve says, was nice to see Nat Phillips like catching up with an old friend from university, Chloe. There is with Nat there, you know, he came on, I thought he helped settle everything down. I think one of the ways he helped settle everything down was, I think he allowed the idea that Gomez was just in charge, which at the minute, when it's Matip and Gomez, I think Gomez wants to be the senior centre-half, and that's often the way in which it worked. But when it was Gomez and Nat Phillips, it's very clear who the senior centre-half was. And then he just decided to just come and win everything that was in the air and allow Gomez to focus on looking after where the line was, playing out and dealing with the lads when they were trying to run past him.
Yeah, it's hard not to like Nat Phillips, isn't it? He comes on, he plays out his skin, he heads a load of balls, and then he smiles, gives the crowd a clap and then goes off and his job's done. And he really is an old school centre half, but it's great to see, because you kind of miss those people who just absolutely welly a ball, go through someone, take someone out. And I think there was a spell where the ball was just up in the air for about, it seemed what, like 10 minutes, but in fact it was probably only about 30 seconds. But I swear he got his head to every single ball that went up in the air for those entire 30 seconds. And it didn't seem to come down for a while, but yeah, that's him. And I agree, it made Gomez a bit more relaxed, because I feel like with Gomez with the captain's armband and with Matip there next to him, I felt like where he'd have Virgil next to him and Virgil will coach him through the game, it felt like Joe Gomez had the responsibility of trying to coach everyone through the game with the armband. I think he found it a bit hard through the first half, but through the second half, that both, you know, centre-halves, they know their decision-making and they also know the style of play. It's two very different styles of play, and one's recovery and one's absolutely head everything away. And it was brilliant second half from both of them.
Wacko76 in the comments says, hope we get drawn at home just so I can get into Anfield for a game, which is, you know, pretty reasonable in there as well. Gareth Jones in the comments says, will he go stronger in the quarters? The remaining eight teams, Rob, well, seven, not including us, pretty dismal pickings, really. Certainly with the idea of another away, you know, so many of them down south, far too many of them down south for my liking. The idea of getting Tottenham away twice in a week looms on the horizon there. Oh. What do you want from the draw? Do you just want any home game, or what is it that you want from the draw at this point?
Who's technically the weaker side left?
Sunderland. It's definitely Sunderland. It's not technically, Rob. It's Sunderland.
I thought they might be out. Did Brentford make it through as well?
Yeah, they did. Yes. Away.
So yeah, Brentford a lot better than Sunderland. One of those two at home, please, Brian.
You'd want Brentford, because Brentford will go strong. They'll pick a first 11. Brentford, I think.
I don't care. I'd still rather play them than Tottenham. Even Tottenham, yeah. And also for the reasons you cited, don't want Tottenham twice in a week. You know, but let's be the positive thing is City are out. And it's not because I particularly feared City. I think had we got them in a semi-final, we could have come out on top. But the graft that would have been, just, you know, emotionally, you can't.
The drama of it, Rob, would have just driven you mad. This competition, yeah. At the minute, we're all enjoying it a little bit and we're enjoying these lads. The idea of having to do City home and away across two legs would have just had us all going mad.
Yeah, and those sort of games, the sort of heavyweight clashes, they end up taking a kind of precedence over what's a seemingly routine Premier League game against a Crystal Palace or whoever, and they shouldn't come anywhere near that status, really. I know that some people might disagree because there's a cup at stake, but I'm sorry, we've got bigger fish to fry. Love us to win the League Cup, but the league game's more important.
Yeah, there's the January sort of issue in that, you know, this two-legged semi-final as well that sort of needs sort of keeping an eye on, in that, you know, how much can he rotate when there's, you know, is forwards, for example, when there's two of them likely to be on African Cup of Nations duty, and so there's a little bit of a sort of thing there, really. Part of me, because of this January sort of issue, would almost rather get Chelsea in the quarterfinal and just see what happens. And then beat them, great. We're in a really good position. If we go out, then sound. And that's one less thing to worry about in January. That's almost where I'm at with it, really. But then, I don't know.
No, I can see the arguments. Also, just think in general, you know, it's all right not to be in those semi-finals. The one thing I would say about the semi-finals is quite interesting. The first leg is the midweek between the Chelsea away game and the Cup third round. So you're getting the Cup third round to factor in as well. The second leg is the game after the Cup third round too.
Okay.
So you, it's a bit of a funny one, really, as to what the actual priority might be between the Cup third round game and the two semi-final games. And then the game after that weekend then is Brentford at home. So it's really sort of strange one to imagine, and without knowing literally what any of the fixtures are, and also, John, if we're in it, because we might get knocked out in the quarters by Sunderland, for instance. Do you know what I mean? So you've got to bear that in mind, haven't you?
Yeah, no, absolutely. But I think the quarterfinals would be much better to go out in than the semis.
No, that 100%.
It appeals to me.
Or so the final, for that matter.
Yeah, well, no, absolutely. Although at least we get a day out, but extra games and all that.
Yeah, absolutely. Where are we? Does the semi-final double leg? I mean, the AFCON league games might get pushed back. Absolutely fucking not, Steve. Let's be crystal clear about this. All the favours we get from the African Cup of Nations will end after we play Chelsea in the league. There will be no further favours at that sort of point. Nothing happening on that at all. Don't be thinking that for a second. What else have we got in the comments? Yeah, people talking about Brighton at Anfield. We're going to be coming on to that later on. And it was horrible last season and the season before that AS. So don't think that's not coming up in a minute or two. Last little thing, actually, Chloe, in the comments, and for everyone, really, Lineker Fernandez, refused to believe that's what you were christened, but maybe I'm wrong. Says also, let's talk about the influence of Pep Linders here. Just brilliance under Klopp. I think it'll be a tough call when it comes to once Klopp goes, Gerrard. Linders, I don't really want to talk about that bit, Chloe, but what you do get the impression of around this competition, Liverpool do see it as a testing ground for the footballers, but also I get the impression, you know, that it's Linders who comes out and does the press conference. I get the impression it's a testing ground for a lot of people at the back of the pitch, off the pitch as well. It's an opportunity for development. Liverpool are very committed to that, up to and including letting Sepp Vandenberg play for Preston.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, to be fair, the League Cup, when you're in it, you want to win it. But if you go out from a Liverpool perspective anyway, you're not really that bothered about it, in the sense of there are bigger things in the picture. But saying that, it is a great time for the players, their experience, the coaching staff. I mean, we had Critchley do a couple, didn't we? And look at where he's gone now, and he's doing brilliant there. So it really is. It's also the niceness around the club is the fact that it's given opportunities and chances to everyone in the club, and it's showing trust within everyone, which is what I really, really like.
Yeah, I think he's great. And I think, you know, you mentioned there the future, you know, we need to, you know, not presume that he necessarily wants the big job. And I think that, you know, he might decide that, well, actually, he'll sort of come in and work with, you know, whoever that Liverpool go for. And that's the continuity. And I think that's almost the ideal from a Liverpool Football Club point of view, because, you know, he is such a big part of what we do. You know, he is kind of, you know, as you say, you know, almost integral to sort of our success, really. But at the same time, you know, as Liverpool Football Club, as a super club, as you wonderfully describe us, Neil, you know, in a position where we can give a job to a rookie, effectively, or someone who does us, did 6 months of the Dutch league that didn't work out for. And so I think they'll decide not. So I think the ideal all round is he stays and he works with whoever the next person is and gives that sort of continuity there, because the players obviously love him. You know, Jürgen obviously loves him, trusts him completely, and he's doing a fantastic job, and as lots of people throughout the club are.
Just last little thing on it, Rob, really is, I think this will remain, this tournament, it will remain a testing ground, it will remain an opportunity for players to get some time and get some rhythm, and that'll go all the way through if Liverpool do make the semi-finals, and maybe even go all the way through to the final as well. I think Liverpool are very committed to growth and players taking responsibility, and I think that's another reason why they'll be pleased with Gomez in the end last night. He leads that team right the way through. I think you get to see the same sort of leadership from Jones and Chamberlain over the course of the match. I think Liverpool want to see these players grow at every opportunity, and the longer they're in this competition this season, the more opportunity there is for growth.
Yeah, I don't know though, Neil. You know, we're quickly out of the phase where you can say, yeah, we can play a team full of kids, before you find yourself in a quarter final away at Tottenham or away at Chelsea.
I still think we'd do it. I think a quarter final. I think they might change one or two more depending on the injuries. But I think, for instance, I'd be surprised if Morton's not getting at least 45 in that sort of fixture. I'd be surprised if there isn't one or two, if Williams isn't featuring in that sort of fixture as well. I wouldn't expect a Harvey Blair, but yeah, everything else I would see as being, if this is about developing these players for the big occasion.
I think it's possible. I mean, a lot of it would depend on the state of the fitness of the rest of the squad at any given moment. You've got to remember, yesterday, unavailable for selection, who hadn't had games recently, are the likes of Fabinho, Thiago.
Yeah.
Who else am I missing? Well, Naby Keita is recently injured as well. So, and James Milner, of course. So you wonder, had Milner not played recently, he would have probably been a shoe-in. Thiago would have been picked because he needs the minutes. So we can say Tyler Morton, but I'm not sure. I do think there will be an inclination to give a Nico a game and to give him and to give Minamino a game and not to have to put the first 11 in for sure. But I do think the first, I do think he'd pick an 11 from the first 16 or 17 if he has to face a big tie in the quarters or semis.
Okay. Chris Brack mentioned in the comments, are you, Chris, that there is a women's game coming up at the weekend. At the weekend for Liverpool women at Prenton Park. It's 12 noon kickoff. Loads of Halloween stuff, loads of fun to be had around it on Sunday at 12 noon. We've got a code for tickets if you want to be able to get in for free for this one. If you put in the code S5YCX6, it'll be in my newsletter that'll go out tomorrow. S5YCX6. But that, the code couldn't have been like Furnace 8, could it, or anything like that, John?
Oh, you know? It could have been worse, though, as well. You do have to say.
I could have been doing initials for ages. S5YCX6 for that, if you do want to enjoy that sort of thing, that is to come. Also, this is Tour Live, and the way in which we do that these days is we move in and out of different parts. You get the live all the way through, so straight away we'll come back to Brighton. So thank you for joining us. It's 4 p.m. this week. Next week, is it Friday next week?
We've moved it to Thursday. We had little chat before and we thought, let's bask in the in an Atletico victory.
Excellent stuff.
Well, victory against Atletico, should I say. So we're not allowed to bask in the opposite.
No, I'm not doing any basking in that occasion. What's the opposite of basking? When does one not bask? Suffering if there's an Atletico victory. But coming up right now, if you're listening to this as a podcast, there is Owen Wynne-Jones on his 24-hour drumathon for children in need. Was that with you?
Yeah, I did that, yeah.
Was he sound?
Oh, I love him. I know you love him. I adore him. Yeah.
There we are.
He doesn't have to jump for 24 hours to get on my show.
And I spoke to Jane Davis from The Reader about the Gravity Festival that's coming up there. So those are happening now if this is a podcast. I hope you're enjoying these Tour Lives. Neil Atkinson here for you for a second, in a minute or two. John Gibbons will be speaking to Owen Wynne-Jones about him doing a drumathon around children in need. And then not long after that, I will be speaking to Jane Davies, who's the founder of The Reader, about the Gravity Festival, which is on the 5th, 6th and 7th of November in Calderstones Park. Do take all of this into your idea of weekend plans for weekends to come, if there's anything that you want there. And do listen now to John and Owen.
And it's John Gibbons for Tour Live, and I'm delighted to be joined over Zoom by an old friend now, I'd like to say, a friend of the Anfield Map, Owen Wynne-Evans, who came back on. I checked the date, mate, it was in March 2020, so the very start of lockdown. Little did we know what was sort of ahead of us. I think we all thought it'd be a few weeks, but I reached out to you because, you know, at that time, obviously, you know, it was a tough time for everyone, but you were bringing light and sunshine literally to everybody's days.
Oh, thanks, John.
But sort of, you know, since then, it feels like, you know, lots more people are sort of onto what you're doing. And do you feel like sort of, I see your profile's grown in that time, but also people sort of reaching out to you and really appreciating the work that you do?
You know what? Yeah, it's really kind of you to say that, John. And can I say, it's lovely to be back on the show. Thank you so much for having me. It always feels so lovely and welcoming you. So thank you. Yeah, you know, the last time I spoke to you, it was kind of not long after I'd done the drumming weatherman video, and, you know, I've been carrying on doing my kind of social media weather forecasts and that sort of stuff. And yeah, it's just weird how one little thing can kind of change a lot of other things, you know? Yeah. And that's just been incredible. And, you know, at the end of the day, John, most of the time, what I try to do is put a positive spin on what can sometimes be a fairly negative thing. You know, the weather, especially when it's raining, like, you know, we get here in much of the Northwest. But yeah, I feel very lucky and I love my job. Absolutely.
So you mentioned there a small thing turning into sort of a much bigger thing. I think that is an accurate description for what we've come to talk about today, which is a 24-hour drumathon that you have signed yourself up for. I mean, when I was reading it, I was like, this can't be right. Like, there must be some sort of, you know, you read the small print and you think you can't actually be doing this, but I've checked, mate, and it looks like you are actually drumming for 24 hours or for children in need.
Absolutely, John. Yeah, I've got to be honest. I have had the same realization many times over the past couple of months. I'm like, am I playing the drums for 24 hours? What? You know, it's just utterly bonkers. So yeah, exactly as you said, I'm going to be playing the drums for 24 hours for children in need. It's the BBC Breakfast Drumathon. It kicks off on the 12th of November, 8:30. Finishes the following morning. And, you know, it's just been bonkers. To be honest, I wasn't expecting the training to be what it is. So I'm, you know, here in my kind of casual sportswear at the moment, because I've just been at the gym for an hour, you know, and I do two gym sessions a day now. I'm sat in front of my drum kit. I'm playing this for 4 hours a day, or I should be anyway. It's a lot, but, you know, playing the drums for 24 hours is a lot. So I need to be as ready as I can. Although, to be honest, I don't think I'll ever be ready.
No, it's the kind of thing that I guess, you know, how do you prepare for? Because you mentioned the training that's sort of grueling, but, you know, 24 hours, you know, it's, you know, what's your plan in terms of meals? What's your plans in terms of sort of keep, because the energy levels is obviously so important.
100%. I'm really lucky that on the Drumathon project, we've got Professor Greg White. Greg is basically the mentor and trainer for a lot of the people who do the Children in Need challenges, just to prepare them for, you know, from going to not doing this sort of thing to then having to do it. So Greg has put me on a training plan, which means, you know, I do a mixture of kind of cardio and strength-based stuff at the gym every day. We've also got Marcus Smith from the University of Chichester, who's helping out with the kind of, you know, how many hours a day I should be drumming. And also, it's just great to have real specialists help, you know, as well as Marcus and Greg. My mentor is Mark Richardson from Skunk and Nancy. So Mark has been teaching me, you know, how to play the drums for a long time without keeling over, basically. But, you know, as far as food goes, I get throughout the whole thing, actually, Greg was only asking me the other day what my favorite foods are. And I think as well as the stuff that I'll need to be, you know, consuming to keep the energy levels up, I think that there will be an element of like a carrot on a stick where I'm always been given treats, you know, just to keep me going, John, and make sure that I, because I've got to get to the end, you know, that's the goal. I'm not going to be smashing the drums flat out for 24 hours because that's not sustainable.
Yeah.
But there will be peaks and troughs throughout every hour. But one thing I will be doing, other than 5 minutes every hour that I get to have a break to go to the toilet, I'll be playing the drums for the whole time. And it's incredible, you know, the toll that could take on my body, I guess.
Yeah. No, it's a huge undertaking. You know, you mentioned there you sort of, you know, feel like, well, yeah, you have to do it. You have to get to the end. The support that you're getting must be really helping, you know. You mentioned your social media before. You're getting positive messages of people all the time. But I've also noticed across the BBC as well, I had radio. The day I messaged you to say, will you come on? I then drove to work and Radio 1 and they were talking about it. And they were like, you said this thing Owen's doing. But everyone, you know, is right behind you and you must feel that, and that must be helping when you are doing the arduous training sessions.
Oh, 100%, John. And you know, it's very similar to, you know, well, sport, you know, football, any kind of anything big that's happening, you know, people need to train for those sorts of things. And if they're athletes, if this is their job, well, of course they're conditioned to do that, you know, and it's kind of something that they do and they do really well. I am not a professional drummer, you know, so going from zero, pretty much, you know, okay, I am a fairly good drummer, but I don't do gigs and arena tours. Not yet, anyway, yeah, darling, well, not yet. I think the support has really helped me. You know, you mentioned Greg James there. He was talking about it on Radio 1. I've had some amazing drummers reach out to me and I've been able to meet and chat to some of my favorite drummers as well. Like the other day, they surprised me on BBC Breakfast by bringing Matt Nicholson from Bring Me the Horizon, who's one of my absolute favorite drummers. They brought him in and I got to chat to him, and, you know, there's so much to learn in so little time, but it's for such a great cause. I'm excited, but I don't know if you can see, I know that, you know, I'm explaining this to you without anyone being able to see it, but my hands are now started to get blistered. And I've got these calluses forming, which is good, which is what we need. So we need more of that, really.
I never thought I'd say here we need more calluses on the anthem, but there we are. And it seems to be a thing. I mean, Have you thought about what you're going to do at 8:30 the day after? So as you mentioned there, the carrots on the stick. You start at 8:30 in the morning, finish at 8:30 the next day. Have you got a goal in mind saying, as soon as I finish, I'm going to have a drink or what is it?
You know what? Actually, yeah, I probably will want a drink. So maybe I'll ask them to have a little glass of wine ready for me, John, or a little pint of beer. But I reckon, having spoken to some people who have undertaken, you know, these kind of endurance things previously, when you're done, most people just want to stop and go to bed. So I probably won't want to see a drum kit again for a long time. And I probably won't want to go to the gym for a long time. Although I am kind of getting into enjoying that.
Oh, well, there you are.
But it's really interesting.
It's a fantastic thing you're doing, and absolutely fair pay. And if people want to support you, and I would very much encourage you to do so, bbc.co.uk/Pudsey, or obviously if you want to go to Owain, his Twitter, it's Owain Wynne-Evans, and the hashtag is BBC Breakfast Drummerphone. So all of that to find stuff. But best of luck with it. Hope you raise loads of money, mate, because you know you'll certainly will have earned it.
Oh, John, thank you so much. And congratulations on a great game as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Cheers, mate.
Thanks, John. Take care.
It is Neil Atkinson and John Gibbons in the middle of this tour live for you. Just have a chat about the idea of subscribing to the Anfield app if you haven't done so already. Theanfieldrap.com/subscribe. Download the app and use tokens there. But John, it felt like last weekend it was a season that came alive for the Reds. It really was. I was saying it won't be a marker before the Manchester United game. It sort of is in a sense, but the one thing it was a marker of was how much you can enjoy this Liverpool team at the moment.
Yeah, it was a fantastic day. It felt like the season had been building towards something, and like you, I wasn't completely convinced it was going to be last Sunday, but I talked a lot in the build-up that the team were maybe short of a statement win in the Premier League. You know, we'd had them in Europe, but short of it in the Premier League. I bored everyone with my stat that we hadn't beaten a team above 14th. Manchester United looked below 14th on Sunday, but that was because of how we made them look, and it was a fantastic performance. It was one that got not just the country, but I think the whole world looking. You know, you can imagine sort of, you know, football fans wherever they are around the world going, have you seen this, which only happens every now and again in football, and we achieved that on Sunday. So it was a brilliant day, and I thought the content that we did was incredible as well, both in terms of the audio that we did sort of in the ground, which came across really well. I listened to on Monday and it just sounded,
it's always like a risk, but it's great when it comes off.
Yeah, well, just sounded much better than I even hoped it would, really, in terms of like the singing in the background and stuff like that, and how everyone spoke. So that was good. And then the post-match pint on the bus home was really, really cool. And so, yeah, it was made up with everything that we did. But obviously, I thought the stuff on Monday was great as well. You know, everyone getting up with a few sore heads, but making really, really boss stuff. And it was obviously a little bit more reflective, but no less sort of excited and delighted. So, yeah, the content Sunday and Monday I thought was brilliant. And I know a lot of people did subscribe. You know, we tipped them over the edge to want it. And everyone enjoyed it, but it is still there for you. It is still there on the app if you need to hear that post-match show.
It is. That's still there on the app for you. But what there is what we're building towards here, what I think Liverpool are building towards this season, John. And it's I do feel as though it is a season that can just quite quickly run loose. And I mean that is in a positive sense. You know, I feel as though this is a Liverpool side that looks like it's geared in its loins to still be involved in everything in April and May, that it wants the journey, I think, in a big, big way. And that's what we're all about as well here at the Anfield Wrap. We want to be able to support and soundtrack people's journeys from all over the world, whether or not they live just down the road here in Liverpool, or whether or not they live on the other side of the globe. We want to sort of offer that sound. And that's why I love the stuff that's done on the ground. You want to offer the sound of what it's like. Because there's only, I wasn't in the away end at Old Trafford. There's only 3,000, 4,000 who get into these things. Mm. It's great to be able to offer that to people.
Yeah, and the loads of the feedback we got was people all around the world saying, oh, you placed us there where we wanted to be, which is that an away end, you know, as we go into stop his time and Liverpool are winning 5-0, and that's great because that's exactly what we try and do and we want to do all season, really. And it's funny because I felt like, you know, it was a real statement of where back supporters are back as well. I'm on almost kind of football and what it's meant to be is sort of back, really. I know a lot of people, you know, during lockdown when it's behind closed doors and stuff, just struggled to get as passionate about football as they sort of used to be. And I get that, really. And we've been back in grounds for a little while now and it's been great. But that was for me, for Sunday, was a real reminder of actually this is what football, you know, this is the heights that football can take you to. And as you say, Neil, there's loads more. It's impossible as it may seem, there's even greater heights than that this football team could potentially reach this season, and I can't wait to share it with everyone.
There we go. It is the Anfield Wrap. If you wanted to subscribe, it's theanfieldwrap.com/subscribe for that. If you go onto the app, if you haven't downloaded it yet, you can download it from Google Play or Apple Pay stores. I think that is right. But if I'm not, it'll be fine. It's on your phone. You know what the buttons are to press. Download it. You get tokens. If you want to try out everything that we do, that is on there as well. It is, as ever, a pleasure to tell the story of supporting Liverpool from the heart of the city. That's what we were able to do last week with aplomb, because Liverpool currently are making the stories very much worth telling. From the 5th to the 7th of November in Calderstones Park, where the Reader is based, the Reader is putting on a festival. It's called the Gravity Festival, and it's taking its theme from the writer Jeanette Winterson. And she wrote thus: inside books, there is perfect space, and it is that space which allows the reader to deal with the normal problems of gravity. Joining me right now is the founder of The Reader, Jane Davis, to talk about this festival. It's partially online, it's partially in person, using all of the Mansion House in Calderstones Park, Jane, which is what The Reader does. I was there pretty recently having a look around, and it's a remarkable space, everything that's going on in Calderstones Park, from the Story Barn to the Mansion House.
That's right, and even round the park itself with the Tales and Trails, where you can zap in with your phone and get some info and take yourself on a walk around the park as well. So inside and out.
Inside and out. It's all going on in Calderstones Park, which is in and of itself a magnificent place. But The Reader's done unbelievable work across the last sort of 5 to 10 years around the renovation of the Mansion House. So whether online or in person, people are going to get to see what's been going on with the Mansion House, making that the centre of the park.
That's right. And, you know, we opened after our 5-year renovation project in September 2019. Mm-hmm. And so we had 6 months of trying to find our way around this new building before we had to close in the March. So it's absolutely fantastic to be welcoming people back to in-person events of all sorts, and to the cafe. And, you know, we did have a couple of lockdown weddings very early on with like 6 people.
But it's not the same. And it's all that facilities there now. And this festival that's lined up on the 5th, 6th and 7th of November is perfect. Firstly, it's got more than a little bit of stardust. On the Sunday at 3 p.m, you've got Maxine Peake reading from Hamlet and Happy Days, which is, firstly, I mean, it's a wonderful spread of two texts there, it's fair to say.
Yeah.
She's joining you for that.
Yeah.
But a lot of that is with Maxine, and certainly the way Maxine is, a lot of that's going to be about essentially what The Reader's core message is, which is the idea of shared reading. It's not just Maxine's show. Yeah. She's going to be bringing the whole room to life with this.
Yeah, that's right. And we're also going to be showing a few clips from her film, Funny Cow, which I don't know if you've seen it, Neil, but is very funny, but also very serious and very sad. And yet you laugh your head off. And in a way, that's what we want Gravity to be like. It's a place where can you talk about very serious things? Maxine's event is based on the idea of there not always being happy endings. Mm-hmm. And that's something we've all had to contend with over the last 2 years or so, isn't it? Of learning to live with really quite pressing difficulties one way or another. So she's going to talk a lot about that and use those texts, but we'll also see her doing a stand-up comedy routine from Funny Cow.
Excellent. And through the weekend, there's lots of little drop-in sort of bits and pieces. There's pandemic postcards, there's the make sort of stuff in there as well, and there's lots of stuff for families. The Story Barn team are absolutely brilliant. I saw a little bit of the work a couple of weeks ago, bringing their sort of unbelievably improvisational storytelling sessions to life.
Yeah.
That's going to be present as well all the way through the weekend, Saturday and Sunday.
That's right. So you can just rock up with a child or seven and find something to do and be involved, whether or not you've booked in for any of the big events. But if you're going to book in for any of the big events, you need to do that quickly, because Maxine's event, I think, is nearly sold out. We just put a few more tickets out today, actually. And Jimmy McGovern, who you haven't got to yet, but... Sorry, spoiler alert, Jimmy McGovern.
Yeah, you've got Jimmy on Saturday night. He's with Erwin James, which is phenomenal. And it's going to be hosted by Kate Bramhall, who works with The Reader's criminal justice team.
Yeah.
Come on to that in a second.
Mm.
But getting Jimmy in to talk about the recent prison drama he wrote for the BBC Time on Saturday night at 7 p.m. Tickets are £5. They can be booked through The Reader's website. That's something for people to be excited about.
Yeah, it really is, because listening to Jimmy talk about his thought processes as he wrote Time and as the team made it, and what he wants us as human beings out here in the world, some of us agitating for various forms of change, to think about and do, not just watch it, but what else is going to happen. So that's why we've involved Irwin, who, as you know, is the prison columnist for The Guardian, was an inmate for a very long time. And my colleague, Kate, who has been going into prisons reading with people for some years now.
The work that happens from the reader in prisons around the shared reading experience is something that people might not be aware of. They may well know that the reader is in Calderstones Park, some people listening. They may well have heard of the reader. There was the excellent afternoon recently on Five Live. But the idea of this work that's been ongoing, as you say, for years with people from the reader going into prisons and working with prisoners and being part of that sort of pastoral care, it's work that the reader takes very, very seriously, isn't it?
It is, and we've been really lucky to have met a series of commissioners from, you know, national provision to pay us to do that for the last 10 years. That has not been easy to keep hold of. But when you think about, you know, what might happen in your thought process, where essentially a lot of the time people's thoughts are just going round and round and round and round, as you will know from time, you know. But think of the woman who was the chaplain in Time, where her role was to provide a point of, if you like, moral sanity within that setup of that prison. And that's what we believe books can do for people, and especially if you share them. So that's what's been happening, what Kate and many others around the country do week in, week out.
What also happens week in, week out with the reader is the idea of shared reading as an experience. To be really, really clear, this is something that's quite different from book groups. It's instead the idea of people reading aloud limited sections of text, great text, really good poetry, excellent prose, and then discussing them and discussing the real life application. This is, it is not the same as, and that's not to in any way, shape or form act as though book groups aren't a good thing. Of course they are. But what the reader does is something that's quite separate, and it's organised en masse, not just around the country, but around the world.
That's right. Yeah, we've got partners in, I think the current count is 16 countries developing shared reading. Very, very big in our northern partnerships up in Denmark, Norway, Sweden, and so on. And some of those people are going to be at the festival Friday afternoon. Our friends from the north will be presenting with tea and cake. Just rock up if you're interested in hearing what's going on in Denmark and what they've been doing with young people to get young people who you might think are a million miles from reading paper texts to be able to use this ancient but still worthwhile technology.
The other part of all this, the centre of it, there's the sessions every single day, are phenomenally around care, ways to care for people, ways to be alone, ways to find a form of well-being in amongst this, and the use of literature, of text, to be part of that for people's lives. This is, again, something which the reader looks to do. Centres out of Calderstones Park, but it's a worldwide phenomenon.
Yeah, and I think, you know, an ambition of ours would be, can we get shared reading to every single care home in the UK? I'm very sorry, I cannot remember the number of those care homes, but should we just take a guess and say 17,000?
Yes, why not?
You know, Are there 35,000 people willing to be volunteers, two for each care home, go in with a book, read to people who still have their faculties and can be deeply interested in life and thinking about their lives and their pasts? We need help with that. And so do, you know, I'm 65. I'm
Well, you can get down and be part of that. That's every single day. If you're just intrigued by this, every single day on there around care, around people being alone, it is from sort of 5 p.m. every day for that. Family stuff during the day, stuff on grief, 12 noon on the Saturday as well. Also on the Saturday, he says somewhat immodestly, you and I, Jane, plus our friend Pranav Sood, will be talking about the Odyssey. You've described it as Homer's Guide to Being Alive Now. I had a chat to Pranav this week and we were preparing for it, and Pranav went, well, it's a broad brief. So we are talking about the Odyssey, me and Pranav, with you, and we're very excited about it on Saturday at 3 p.m.
I'm going to be very excited to hear why two such people as you and Pranav would be obsessive readers of the Odyssey, you know, and I will be pressing you hard for the answers to that. But may I just say, you've got a very, very good, what do you call it, role model in Mr. Bob Dylan. Did you read in the paper yesterday?
Yes.
Bob's son saying, the journalist said to him, do you and Bob ever like look back at the 1960s? And he said, no, Dad likes to look ahead. But if we were going back, we'd go back to Milton, Shakespeare and Dante. And I thought, at last, I always knew I was Bob Dylan's soulmate.
Well, that'll be at 3 p.m. on Saturday, the 6th of November. There'll be other stuff around that day. I've said before that Jimmy McGovern's that evening at 7 p.m. There's a piece of work on motherhood by Pragya Agarwal as well at 5 p.m. on the Saturday. It's a full lineup all the way through.
Yeah, it is. I'm just reading that book at the moment.
Oh, is it good?
Yes, it is, and it's giving me loads of thoughts.
It's always a relief when the book's good, isn't it?
Yeah, so lots to talk about there. Women who are listening, come and listen to Pragya, because lots of things I've never thought about the biological being of femaleness.
Excellent stuff. Everything that you need all the way through with the reader from the 5th of November. It starts at about 12 o'clock, goes all the way through until the 7th. In general, though, if you can't make that weekend for any one of a variety of reasons, it is always there in Calderstones Park, the reader, the cafe, the story barn, anything that you need. Excellent stuff for children, but also, as has been made very clear by Jane, for children of all ages, all the way up to 90 or so. Everything that you would ever want in there in a literary sense. Do go and check the Mansion House out if you have time, but do come and see us. Saturday the 6th for me at 3 p.m, the 7 p.m. for Jimmy McGovern, and then also Maxine Peake the following evening.
And for people who are wondering what to do between you and Jimmy McGovern, the bar will be open.
Marvellous stuff,
so,
indeed.
So, you know, there you go.
Can't ask for any more than that. Thank you very much for Jane, and we'll get back on.
Okay.
Thank you very much indeed to Jane and to Owen for taking the time to speak to John earlier today. Hopefully that was useful for you, and we'll get back over now, and you can enjoy the rest of Tour Life. And now we find ourselves back. It is Rob Gutman, it is Chloe Bloxham, it's John Gibbons, and we are talking about this one against Brighton. And let's be crystal clear on this, Chloe. Let's remember that last season, they beat us at Anfield in 1920. It's a really tight 2-1 that ends up very, very sticky indeed. Liverpool down to 10. And even the season before that, 18-19, I think it's our second home game of the campaign. And it's a 1-0 that never felt like a battle of laughs for Liverpool either. This is a Brighton team that have got experience of not just last season winning at Anfield, but even in front of a crowd, making it really difficult at Anfield. And I'm expecting it to be a tough afternoon for the Reds.
Yeah, it will be. I mean, I've sung praises of Brighton for a while now. I absolutely love, I don't want to say I love the football club, but I actually really do like the football club. It's got to be said. I enjoy what the manager's doing there. I enjoy the style of football. I think second half against City, they're very unlucky to not, you know, get a couple of goals more than just one that they get. And they've got some very good players, and just the style of play, it's brilliant to watch. And they're always going to cause teams a real problem, and that's why they are where they are on the table so far this season. So it will be a hard game, but obviously at the same time, it's Liverpool Football Club, who were in rhythm, you know, unbeaten in how long, unbeaten in the season. And at the same time, I think Brighton, although they'll be up for it and they'll want a reaction from the City game and from conceding early, they're coming up against the Titan in Liverpool. Yeah.
They flunked it early against City, Rob, and then they righted themselves, and they actually have a pretty good second half. They play quite well. I prefer it if a side's going to play us and City close together. I actually prefer it if they play us first, do the learning from us, and then play City to an extent. I do prefer that. But it is worth saying they do flunk it early against City, and maybe that's something Liverpool can bear in mind, that they'll have a bit of memory about that, maybe look to start fast and put them under some massive pressure.
Yeah, I mean, it's all very well rallying when you're 3-0 down at half-time, as you say.
Yeah.
They got, you know, first half, they're taught something of a lesson. They're a dangerous side. They're having a really good season. Potter's doing really, really well. But I'm glad we're playing them now than 2 weeks ago. They've been tenderised. Whether it's enough.
They also had the midweek game as well, which they won't be used to in terms of their preparation. They had a League Cup game midweek. Yes, they do make a number of changes, but we're used to that and they're not.
Yeah, sure. I'm just seeing on the comments that Lamptey's back. That's a shame because he's really good. But look, at the end of the day, they're not a team that's going to be as defensive as some sides would be. I know they're a solid outfit and not a piece of cake to break down. But we've rested the players we want to rest for this. We've had a week for those guys to prepare separately. You've got to be very optimistic about this without getting carried away.
Yeah, I think we need to be, well, we have to be optimistic. And I think the players will be, they'll be absolutely buzzing to get back onto the pitch after what happened at Swords of Old Trafford. And, you know, you talk about a week's rest, they had half an hour rest on the pitch at Old Trafford, didn't they? Because yeah. they were just sort of, you know, able to pass around and turn it into a... into probably less intense than one of Liverpool's normal training sessions it was sort of in the end. And so they'll be raring to go. And I think whoever he picks, you know, up front will be confident and will feel like, you know, there's a real competition for places up there at the moment. If you're not scoring, get out the way. If you're in the front three for Liverpool, you're hopeful that we've got some decent midfield options. Although I suppose he could, you know, if he feels he needs to, just pick two of that and then go for all four of the forwards. We have not seen that so far this season, I don't think, certainly not from the start. But I think, you know, there's always an opportunity that he does throw that in, and he's got, you know, a pick of who he wants to do a centre half along with the fullbacks who had a nice rest in the weekend as well. So I think we'll fast start. I think the atmosphere is going to be brilliant. It has been for almost, yeah, for every home game this season. And I think, you know, having what happened last week at Old Trafford again, I think everyone's going to be desperate to get in there. And so as Rob says there, you can't be complacent, but at the same time, everything points to a really good Liverpool performance.
Just sort of working through a couple of things, Rob, in the team news talk. Linders suggested he felt Fabinho would be available for this one. He suggested Keita may well be available for this one. You felt like it might come a bit too soon for Milner and Thiago?
Yeah, Milner's international break.
Oh, it's Milner, yeah. Milner's international break, so it's going to come too soon, obviously, by some distance for Milner. Thiago maybe the week after, but Liverpool should have Fabinho and probably have Keita knocking around in this one as well.
Yeah, I'd love both of them to be available. I'd take one of them being available to augment Jordan, and then you put down to picking one of Curtis or Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain. I suspect Curtis would get the nod in that scenario. I do, in terms of freshness, we could do with a body back because Curtis and Chamberlain played most of the match last night, didn't they? Yeah.
I thought Jones was playing within himself, I felt.
In that I did.
It was a very much... half an eye on the weekend. Now that might just be his own half an eye, it might not be the manager's, I'd like to point out, but I thought he was playing within himself.
I did too, but I think he slightly suffered a bit from the syndrome that Minamino did. He needs better players around him to create space for him, but I did think he improved second half, not radically. He was at times frustrated, but there was a couple of times I thought things could have come off for him. But I agree with you, that wasn't the vintage. I'd like to have seen him dominate the entire game, but still I have enormous faith in Curtis Jones. And if he is fit, I hope he does start.
Other little things around the way with this game's actually timed, Chloe, is that it's a 3 p.m. kickoff, and it's a 3 p.m. kickoff for Chelsea and City. I expect it'll be the last time this is the case this season. But I also think this is, you know, Brighton currently sit in fifth. It's really congested with a lot of these sides that'll probably end up, the majority of them, in the Europa League or Europa Conference places. Sides like Everton, Brighton, Manchester United, West Ham United, those sorts of deep mediocrities. There's going to be a gap that's going to open up, and I think that it could well be Saturday this week where there's this move that'll begin to happen. If Liverpool beat Brighton, a couple of other results go, teams take points off one another. Tottenham, Manchester United can't both win, but they can both definitely not win because they're showing themselves to be very good at that indeed. You know, I feel as though we are going to be talking about an absolute nailed on top three if we're not already by the time this one finishes.
Yeah, for sure. I do think, you know, I think City play Palace, don't they? And I think Palace can get a result there, I really do. They've been in trouble for City a couple of seasons now. But as you said, it's very odd, isn't it, what they're doing? Like, I've never really seen... I think it was City-Leicester, and that was like a 3 p.m. kickoff, and like the R5 was absolutely a dull game. I don't know what they're doing with the fixtures, but at the same time, I think it might work out for us in the sense of... At times, you can feel the pressure if you're a late kickoff and someone else in front of you or in and around just got the result. At the same time, it can work against you, the fact that you've not got that on your back. But the three teams up there, Chelsea, Liverpool and City, they're all going to be looking for wins across the board, and they're all going to be in touch with each other. And I already knew before the season started that Man United was nowhere near this title chat. Tottenham was nowhere near this title chat. And the big three was the big three that are there. And I think the big three will be there for the majority of this season. And it will be a very, very close fight. And I think this is a weekend where maybe we can, you know, make a slight little gap between everyone.
Last little thing about it, John, is Rob there's mentioned Lamptey. You know, we've seen him be a threat. We know that they've got Lallana. We know he's a tidy player. Pascal Gross can put a good ball in. Morpé's had a reasonable season so far. All of these things are true, but Liverpool, I think, asserting themselves will be absolutely massive. And this is going back to remembering the fact that, you know, we have got the best player in the world. We've got lots of other wonderful things as well. We've got the best right back in the world, the best centre half in the world, the best goalkeeper in the world, and maybe the best number six in the world back playing. This is a serious, serious Liverpool team. This is a season that we're, you know, we're enjoying every last minute of. I just can't quite see how this Liverpool team now, maybe 1-4 years ago, would have a big win somewhere like Man United and then take their eye off the ball for the next one. These lads just don't seem to do that, I don't think. I'm expecting Liverpool to... I can see it being a bit of a dogged affair possibly against Brighton, but the flip side is I can actually see a world where if Liverpool do get on top, they will absolutely stamp on Brighton until they feel as though they've put the game to bed.
Yeah, I think so. I think, you know, Brighton are a team to be sort of respected, and we've all said that. But at the same time, Liverpool are notably ahead of them in terms of quality. And also, you know, I loved Ben Foster's comments in the week saying he feels like they're the best coach team he's ever sort of come up against, really, in terms of, you know, how we work for each other, what we're doing, the movements, the, you know, knowing each other's game sort of inside out, knowing where each other are almost before we've sort of played the ball, really. And also the intensity, what you were talking about there, Neil, around, you know, you can't imagine that dropping. There's such a big determination to win the league this season amongst these players. And look, you know, Manchester City fans, Chelsea fans might be feeling the same about their team and if they are, sort of good luck to them. But, you know, from a Liverpool point of view, focusing on us, they seem, you know, 18, 19 levels of determined, you know, 19, 20 sort of levels of determined to win the league this season, to do what's needed, to post a really, really aggressive points total. And they know that comes from winning every week and being on it every week. And I fully expect them to be right on it on Saturday.
Right on Saturday. Give me a prediction, Rob.
4-0.
That's right on it. Excellent stuff. Chloe?
3-0.
3-0. John?
I was going to say 3-0 as well.
I'll say 2-0. But right on it, a 2-0 is what I'm expecting from Liverpool. Listen, thank you very much indeed. I hope you've enjoyed everything that we've had for you on Tour Live this week. It's been an absolute pleasure, as it always is. Loads of terrific stuff on the Anfield Wrap. Little XG thing for you, John.
Okay.
Brighton so far this season are, broadly speaking, a par for expected goals in favour of them. They are massively getting away with murder defensively. XG is around 11 from open play, and they've only conceded 7 so far. That could just right itself quite nicely over the weekend. Let the reversion to mean begin. all that stuff for you on the Anfield Wrap, on the report, all the fun stuff as well that we do all the time. Friday show to be coming as well, building up to the weekend. Team talk after the manager's done his press conference. There'll be the Friday night on our video offering as well. Everything that you need from the Anfield Wrap. Subscribe at theanfieldwrap.com/subscribe. Or download the app, but whatever you're doing this weekend, whether you're able to get into Anfield or not for this one, this Saturday, 3 p.m., we'll have you covered post-match as well. It is, as ever, a pleasure to speak to you. Thank you very much indeed to Chloe Bloxham, to Rob Gutman, to John Gibbons. I've been Neil Atkinson. See you later. Sports Social Podcast Network.